Hello, we're going to go ahead and get started here. My name's Richard Weifel, and this is my colleague Dan Anderson. We're both software engineers on a team at Microsoft building mixed reality experiences. Before we get started, I kind of get an idea of who's in the audience. So how many people in the audience have done 3D application development before? Okay, so we've got a fair number of people. And how about how many people who have done virtual reality development? Okay, a little less. And how about HoloLens development? Okay, we've got a fair number of those people too. That's really helpful. And actually, how many have seen the Datascape demo back in the immersive Windows mixed reality group? Okay, so we've got a couple people who have seen that too. Great. So today, what we're going to talk about is what it takes to build a mixed reality application for Windows and some of the lessons that we've learned over the past year building this project that we call Datascape. This talk's an introduction to mixed reality. If you're already an expert in VR, you'll probably find a lot of this information isn't new. And that's because developing for Windows mixed reality is similar to developing for other devices. If you're already developing for HoloLens, you'll find developing for the new immersive mixed reality devices to be really easy. So first, I'll go ahead and show you a little video here of a Datascape. This, if you've already been back and seen the demo in the booth, then you'll have a better view of what it is, because it obviously is better to see on a 3D device than it is here on a 2D display. But basically, we started developing Datascape with 3D map data because we had a lot of companies that talked to us about the value of seeing their data in context on a map. And for this particular application, we chose spatial weather data because it's both beautiful and it impacts, you know, every aspect of our lives and our work. We get this cloud data and wind model data from the National Weather Service, and then we use that to drive the spatial visuals that you see. And then finally, we allow the users to kind of explore that data in this green energy scenario with solar panels and wind generators. So at Microsoft, we believe that mixed reality devices will allow developers to create solutions that wouldn't have been possible with 2D displays. One area where we think this is particularly true is in spatial data visualization. Viewing spatial data in 3D allows people to create get new insights into the data that would be impossible or very difficult with 2D screens. With these devices, you can move around the data in natural ways to take advantage of what you've learned, you know, over your whole lifetime since you were a child and how to understand the 3D world. So we created Datascape to inspire other developers about what can be done with spatial data visualization and with these new immersive mixed reality headsets. Now I'm going to turn it over to Dan, and he's going to talk a little bit about how we built Datascape.
Thank you. All right, so first quickly, let's just get started on, tell me how to get started on mixed reality. Pre-order that new headset, right? Download Visual Studio, get the new Windows Creator update for the SDKs, and then download Unity. That's what we used for this product. Of course, you don't have to use that one. Any Windows Universal app will do. If you have HoloLens experience, then you'll find within a matter of hours, you can have your new application running in immersive mode, which is a very cool thing to be able to switch from one experience to a new one, right, and see kind of the benefits from either of them. Okay, so you're ready to go. Before you dive in too deep, let's talk about a couple of things that is a little bit different than developing for like a traditional flat screen. How are you going to stage your app? Are you going to be sitting? Are you going to be standing up? Are you going to be running around? What about input? And then let's talk about performance. Okay, so you have new flexibility with these new devices, especially with you inside-out tracking and those kind of things. So you're no longer tied to your computer. Although, if you want to, you'd make a seated experience. Now, for Datascape, we made it so in this mode, you have limited way of turning, right? So we have, if you turn 90 left or right, we put up little rotation buttons. You can rotate your virtual world. Now, if you do a standing experience, you don't have this problem anymore. You can rotate freely. Either of those, if you want to move around your world, you'll have to do some kind of teleportation. Richard's going to talk a little bit more about that, but at this point, just know that teleportation is a little bit tricky, and schedule some time for that, because you need to tweak this and get this right. Now, if you have room to move around, you have what's called a room scale experience. And if you want to, then you go crazy and you put this into, you hook it up to a laptop, you put a laptop in your backpack, and now you are free to roam your virtual world as you roam your physical world. So in Datascape, we download map data around us, high resolution around us, and lower as you go into the horizon, right? For room scale and moving around, we made it so as you move around your physical space, start downloading wherever you are in the world, right? So you can walk from Seattle down to LA and experience the whole thing in high resolution around you, right? Make sure you set up the safety zone correctly before you try this out. All right, so input. So you're running on the Windows. All your input devices, all the stuff you're used to is still available for you. So seated, you can try, like, mouse and keyboard works great. Mouse works actually really great, even in 3D. Keyboard works, but you can't see it, so get creative. Figure out how to deal with that. Standing, use your Xbox controller, works really well for us. Now, what we use is the gaze and commit kind of way, where we, just like on HoloLens, we stick a cursor in front of you, you look around, the cursor follows you, and any input available will be how you do the commit. Then also, you have the new Sigstoff input that was announced yesterday. So what we do is if we detect Sigstoff, we'll turn off the gaze and commit. Cursor follows your pointing ray, and that's now your new way. Put away the controller. Go back to gaze and commit. Point of all this is there are many ways many different things available for you. Figure out if you want to tackle them all or you want to focus on one of them. Right. All right. Let's talk about performance. So you want to hit 90 hertz, 90 frames per second for user comfort. Again, Richard's going to talk about this a little bit later. We're rendering in stereo. We have two screens, high resolution. You want to run anti-aliasing on them too. So we run 4x MSAA on them. Bottom line is you have lots of pixels to render and very little time to do so. So start your design with an... With a simple scene, use solid geometry. Hide each other, like hide the pixels from each other, right? Do what I was saying. We were doing with try to do some LOD techniques, more resolution up front, less in the back. Try to stay away from transparency. Transparency will render pixels over and over and over, right? We, however, wanted fluffy clouds. Which means a lot of overdraw, a lot of transparent pixels. So there are many, many techniques out there to use, right? For us, we decided to use a technique where we render all our clouds to a quarter size buffer. We then stretch that up back on the screen. So we now quarter the amount of pixels that we need to render, right? Stretch that back up. We analyze the edges of the clouds. Because you get a little bit blurry cloud, blurry edges, and then we render those back. We make a stencil buffer out of those edges, render those back in high res, and we get nice edges and fluffy, nice middle parts, and we get four x speed on it or so. So and the other thing I want to say there are many, many techniques out there. try them all, but be sure to test them on device. If you want to render clouds, you would on a flat screen, you would only need a handful of little sprites put on top of each other, make them fluffy and nice, and the illusion is there, looks like clouds. If you put this in 3D, you'll be able to pick up on shapes much better than you can on a flat screen. So you'll see those big sprites sitting there in space, right? And the illusion is broken. So for us, we needed to just break those down into even more to get the illusion of shape as well on those clouds, right? So test on device. The other trick that we used was there's an adaptive resolution, adaptive rendering. If you want to target many different types of platforms, like different power, right? Or you have situations like we do, where one scene you'll have no clouds, and one scene you have lots of clouds. As I walk from Seattle, I have lots of clouds, and I walk down to LA, there's no clouds, unfortunately. If you have a scene with lots of clouds, lots of overdraw, your frame will take a dip right there, and then you still want to have, and then you have not the same when there's no clouds. With adaptive rendering, what happens is you measure the frame rate. The frame rate starts to get close to that 90 frames. You start lowering the resolution of the screen just a little bit, and then stretch it back up again, lowering the amount of pixels being rendered, and then we get a slightly blurrier screen at that point, but it's kind of something you don't really see. Okay, and then quickly let's talk a bit about some of the APIs, some of the new stuff that is available. So first thing, head pose, and if you're new to 3D, new to this world, right? The cool thing is in Unity, it'll just provide you with the camera, the head pose, right? So. And which is really cool. You don't have to really do anything. But the flip side is, you can't really do anything about this, right? The user is in full control. He's controlling the camera. You don't have to do anything to make it happen. But it's going to happen. You have to deal with the consequences of him putting his head through geometry that you didn't want, right? So deal with consequences instead of making it happen. So input, we have the interaction manager is the one that has all the new six stuff, controller stuff. We have new spatial information, so you can read out the ground floor position. For us, we put the world on the ground floor, right? You can also read out this safe zone that you set up. If you want to avoid people sticking his head through objects, maybe you want to place them outside of the safe zone. If you want to interact with some stuff, you might want to consider placing them inside, right? You have access to device data like field of view on your device, resolution. We use this to figure out for different devices what's the best font size that's still legible, right? You can get the kind of the pixel ratio. You're familiar with HoloLens stuff, World Anchor, which is a cool, truly like mixed reality kind of concept where you save off a physical position in between runs of your app, and you say, next time around, I'm going to load back exactly what this position is in my physical space, and you can get that back, right? So maybe that's how you store off where your keyboard is when you can't see it or something like that. All right. Thank you so much. Richard.
Cool. So now I'm going to talk about some of the lessons that we learned developing Datascape. So the first lesson that I'd like to talk about is testing in device early and often. Seeing a scene in 2D is much different than seeing a scene in 3D. In 2D, it's really hard to get a true sense of scale and of distance between objects. And so if you design stuff in 2D, you may end up with things being too big or too large if you aren't viewing it on device. And with Unity and Windows, you can have a mixed reality device plugged right in, and you can see it right there in the editor, or you can deploy it as an application to see it. So you have multiple ways to get that rapid turnaround. Likewise, for user interactions in 2D and 3D are much different, and so you'll want to make sure that you understand how those interactions work. work in 3D. Techniques that might have worked well for you in 2D, really you don't have the same experience in 3D, and so you'll want to try that out. And in general, actually, rules of thumb that you may have learned for 2D application development, you'll find are different from 3D. And so you want to make sure that you really try stuff on device. Anytime we develop a new feature, we make sure to get it into the device as soon as possible, like from the moment we're thinking of that kind of design, to see how it's going to work and figure out, like, okay, is this going to work well in 3D? An example in Datascape was kind of the density of the wind. So you probably saw some of the videos before that showed kind of the wind going on. And in some of these videos, even here on a 2D screen, you see a lot of lines, and it looks really dense. And you might say, well, maybe it's hard to differentiate between kind of the different layers of wind of what's really going on there. And if you made that decision based on a 2D screen, you might decide, like, we need to make less lines, and so it's easier to understand what's happening. However, when you view that same data on a mixed reality device, you have a completely different experience because you can see the depth of each of the lines. And so you definitely want to make sure that you're trying stuff out on device to see those kinds of subtleties. The next lesson that I want to talk about is the value that we think you can gain out of using 3D to solve these spatial problems. The great thing about this whole set of devices is that the insights that they can gain when you're looking at this 3D spatial data that wasn't previously possible. So take advantage of this in your applications. There's a lot of businesses out there, and you may work for one that have 3D data that previously might be difficult to display kind of on a 2D screen. But now with these devices, you can display them at true size and scale, or you can have, you know, kind of a dollhouse view of it. In Datascape, we, you know, allow you to stand like you're a giant on top of the map, but it's still at true scale, and so you can really get an idea of what's going on. An example is with the wind data. One thing that you see is you see the jet stream. If you look up, you see the jet stream going over your head. And if you look down, you see the wind data, the ground wind on the ground. And they're often going in completely different directions. You'll have the jet stream that's heading to the east, and you might have some ground winds that are heading south. And you can also see how the wind interacts with the train. You can imagine if you had a 2D display where you might have a top-down view, it'd be very difficult to tell what direction the wind was going at kind of these different altitudes. But in 3D, that's really obvious. And so take advantage of that. Also, the other thing is, you know, 3D isn't the solution for every problem. There's some problems that are going to work best on a 2D display, and so don't try to force something into a mixed reality display where it doesn't belong. You know, make sure that you look at the problem you're trying to solve and use the right tool for the job. And luckily with Windows, you can do that on either 2D or with these mixed reality displays. The next lesson that I'd like to talk about is how we like to think about virtual objects the way that you would think about real objects in the world. And the reason for that is because, as humans, we've spent our whole life learning how to interact with a 3D world. I can look out in the audience and I can know that the people way at the back are farther away from me because they appear smaller and they're slightly different shading, and my eyes can tell based on the convergence of them how far away people are. And so as you've learned all these things, you know, throughout your whole life, and so when you're designing virtual things, you should keep that in mind in your design. And so, for instance, you know, if your application has a cup in it, people are used to being able to pick up cups in the real world, and so they're going to expect that they can pick up a cup in your virtual world as well, because to them, these virtual objects, whether they're holograms with HoloLens or whether they're in a virtual world, they're going to think that they should act the way that they do in the real world. And so, you know, make sure that wherever you can, you take advantage of that and use people's experience to your advantage to make it so that you don't have to train them up on things. In fact, this is an area where I really think that as software engineers, we can learn a lot from industrial engineers to make better 3D applications. If you work in a business that has industrial engineers, I'd recommend going and having a conversation with them, because they've been solving these problems in the real world, and now we're solving them in the virtual world, and I bet there's a lot that we can learn from them. Another lesson here is always be thinking about comfort. Earlier, Dan talked about, you know, the camera in the 3D application is the user's head and their eyes. If you move the camera separate from a user's head, like you might do for the teleportation that Dan was talking about, you're creating a discrepancy between what they see visually and what their inner ear tells from the liquid sloshing around. And so you want to, that can cause user discomfort when that occurs. And so there's a lot of techniques that people who have experience in the virtual reality industry have explored for different ways to move people around a virtual world if they can't physically move around. And so you'll want to look at those things. And some of those techniques that people have found are like avoiding acceleration of the camera, because that can cause a lot of discomfort, but using like linear velocity instead, or avoiding having things moving in your peripheral vision, because that's particularly sensitive and can lead to discomfort. And so you'll want to keep that in mind. Another thing that's important for comfort is making sure that you're rendering objects at the proper depth. Now, for those of you who have done 3D application development on a 2D screen, you know that a lot of times you don't necessarily have to worry about the actual depth and the depth buffer. A good example of this is rendering a user interface. Oftentimes, you just render the user interface on top of everything else, and you don't worry about what's the actual depth, because it doesn't matter in a 2D screen. But in a 3D mixed reality device, it does matter. Imagine a situation where you have an object that's 4 feet away from you, and you have another object that's 2 feet away from you, and you can see that object that's 4 feet away in front of the object that's 2 feet away. You're not used to doing that. We don't have superpowers, and we're not able to see through things, and so that can cause discomfort for people. And so you'll want to make sure that you're rendering things at the proper depth. Also, like Dan mentioned before, frame rate's critical for comfort. The higher the frame rate, the less discrepancy between, you know, what you see visually and your inner ear, like I talked about before. So you'll want to make sure that that you pay attention to that as well. The last lesson that I want to talk about is about directing the user's attention. In the 3D world, people can look wherever they want. In a 2D application, you're kind of looking at a screen, and so you kind of have confidence that whatever you display in your application, people are going to be looking at. But in a 3D world, people can be looking anywhere. There's a fellow in the back here that's looking at his phone right now. I'd rather that he was looking up at the screen and paying attention to me, but he's not. He's looking at a phone. So you need to be thinking about those things in your 3D application. You know, it's awesome for users to being able to look around, but as developers, it makes your job more difficult. Some of the things you can use to help yourself there is you can use things like spatial audio. That's part of the Windows API, so that you can use spatial audio so people can hear something off to the side, and they may know that they need to pay attention there. Or you might want to use some sort of visual indicator that draws their attention over to something that's important to you. Or you may want to consider how you design that part of your application to help make it easily accessible to a user. In Datascape, we have this interface that we use that we put up in the sky. And you can imagine if we just had it fixed at one location in the sky, if a user was facing this direction and I had placed it over here, that they would have no easy way to access it without turning around. So for that particular design, we decided to make it so that it would move around to the four cardinal directions on a compass, north, south, east, or west. And so basically, based on the user's gaze, it moves to the closest of those four directions. And so we have confidence that wherever the user is, if they look up, the user interface is going to be somewhere nearby, and so they can easily make the choices that they need to. So just make sure that you pay attention to user attention and whether you need to add things in your application to direct it, or whether you need to consider it in your design is something that's really important. So just some closing thoughts. You know, we think that these mixed reality devices, whether it's the HoloLens or the new immersive mixed reality devices, are really great for spatial data visualization. And so you should think about, you know, what data does your business have that you can really leverage to really do much better things than you've done in the past. Windows Mixed Reality Development uses familiar tools. If you're if you've developed in the 3D applications before, you're going to be right at home. If you've done HoloLens applications, it's going to be really easy. Like Dan mentioned, one of our teams, it took them about an hour or two to take a HoloLens application and make it run on the mixed reality devices, just changing some settings and rebuilding. Make sure that you're considering design for mixed reality, the stuff that Dan talked about with input and staging and performance. Try your ideas quickly in device. And we're all excited to see what all of you out there are going to build and really take advantage of this new space. Thank you all for coming. If you haven't already, check out the Datascape demo on the show floor before the floor here closes. Pre-order your mixed reality dev kits online on the Windows Store. There's code snippets that we use for developing our application on GitHub. Those of you who have already done HoloLens development are probably familiar with HoloToolkit Unity. We're extending that for these new mixed reality devices. There's a pull request that's pending. It hasn't been merged into the main branch yet. But as soon as a Unity version is released that supports the new APIs, that will get merged into the main branch. And you can see this or other sessions on Channel 9. Thank you.